a couple of things. This lovely Thompson Chain Reference New International Version Bible was found in the church, and I'm not sure how you had your devotions the last couple of weeks. But we'll just leave it up at the front, and if this is your Bible, there's no name in it. There are some interesting notes, however. But the notes have no connection with whose it is. So if you want to hang around afterwards and see whose it is and who hasn't had their devotions the last couple of weeks, you'll understand. Some of you have asked this morning when I arrived how the wedding went. Our eldest daughter was married a week ago yesterday. Wonderful time, great time. The only challenge was my wife's sister flew in from the West Coast and stayed with us, and she flew out this morning at 7 o'clock. So last night we talked and we talked and we talked. I think I climbed into bed about 20 to 3 this morning, and the alarm went off at 5. So if I should doze off at all, you will understand. Just, and if I don't make a lot of sense this morning, then that's the excuse. It's not your fault in picking it up. It's my fault in trying to deliver it. So I think I told you about the pastor who dreamed he was preaching and woke up and found out that he was. As you know, we are looking at a series entitled, You Asked For It. And part of that comes out of the idea of giving you the opportunity to give us some topics that you would like to cover, and you have done very well. We've received a number of them in the last little while. They've sort of been interspersed with some specials, like last week we had John Taylor here, and next week we have Chris Middleton with us. So we're sort of breaking up the series, and then of course Easter will come, and so there's just a number of weeks that we will be looking at this. So it will be a longer period of time that we'll take. But thank you. Some of the topics that have been given, we'll just be able to answer it in a quick sort of fashion, rather than taking a whole message time for it. Next week, Chris Middleton will be with us. The week following, the 22nd, I've asked my wife to share with me, and we'd like to talk on marriage. A number of you asked about marriage. How do you have a good, strong, solid marriage? So she will tell you. And she's Irish. This is going to be after St. Patrick's Day, so you can see what's coming. The following week is, we're getting into Palm Sunday and then Easter Sunday. And then following that, we're going to take 3 more Sundays and look at some of the topics that you've mentioned. Some of them are extremely fascinating, and some of them are very difficult. So those questions that have been very difficult, I'm going to have Jason deal with. And I will deal with the more easy, placid ones that I think we can cover. And then following that, we're going to look at the book of Ruth. So four weeks in the book of Ruth. That's a fascinating book. I've carried this around with me for about 2 months now. Here, take it. Thank you. This lovely lady loaned me a couple of CDs before Christmas. So I've been carting them around, and then you've been down east getting sick. And anyway, so there we are. From the last two topics we've looked at, we looked at forgiveness with Pastor Jason, and then 2 weeks ago we looked at guilt. And from that has precipitated a number of you who have either emailed or called or spoke to me after that message and said, would you please talk about anger? Because when we look at guilt and when we look at forgiveness, there's this feeling, this awareness that anger can build up within. What do you do with anger? And so I want to look at that topic today. The word anger comes from the Latin word angelo or angelo. It means to strangle. To strangle. And it can be a cover up for guilt. It can be a cover up for the lack of forgiveness. So many times, anger, if you trace it back enough, if like an onion, you peel off the various layers, you come to a point where there is a bitter spirit, there is an anger that comes as a result of unconfessed sin, which causes guilt. And you'll remember a couple of weeks ago, I said, what pain is to physical hurt, a gift from God to let you know something's going on in your body. Guilt is to spiritual hurt that needs to be dealt with. Anger is a gift from God that reveals to us that there's emotional hurt. So as with pain, you don't ask the doctor for something to cover the pain. Tylenol 3s, please, doctor. No, you say, what is causing me this pain? And he'll try to get to the root of it and deal with it. The same with guilt. Guilt is not something that we just live with or cover up. It reveals to us, and Paul has spoken about that in Corinthians, where he said that the godly sorrow brings about repentance. That's the purpose for guilt. It's not to try to somehow live above it. And we can tend to justify it, to shift the blame, rather than dealing with it. I have sinned, as David said in Psalm 51. I have sinned against you, and you only have I sinned. And when he confessed that sin, there was restoration. Well, anger, in the same sense, is a revelation that there's unresolved conflict. So I want to ask you this question this morning. What is the definition of anger? Now, this may not sound like a sermon this morning. It may sound like a group counseling session. Well, if it's that, then that's what it is for today, to deal with this particular topic. And I am going to ask you to give your feedback, etc., as we move along this. We should be finished by, well, good night, it's only 10:15. We've got scads of time. What time are we? 11:45? You got some more music we can sing? It's going to be a wonderful morning. Happens once a year. I was reminded this morning as I was driving here, when our kids were little, we just had two girls at the time. Our son hadn't been born. This was in Ottawa. We hadn't really connected that in the spring, you push the clocks forward. So we pushed the clocks back. So we were 2 hours out. We got our kids up. They were so tired. We got to church. There was nobody there. We were kind of ticked. We thought, is this Saturday or what? So we waited, and 2 hours later, they all showed up. That was the last time that ever happened to us. But anyway, anger, by definition, is the feeling of tension and aggressiveness which arises in a person when he or she faces a frustrating obstacle or another individual who is a threat to some cherished value like self-esteem. There you got it. The feeling, and it is a feeling, feelings are gifts from God. So there, it is a feeling. And we all have feelings, and those degrees of feelings vary from person to person. But it's the feeling of tension and aggressiveness which arises in a person when he or she faces a frustrating obstacle. It could be an obstacle or another individual who is a threat to a cherished value that we have. It could be our self-esteem. When we are challenged, we can tend to have the feeling of anger. When is anger justified? Well, E. Mansell Patterson put it this way: anger is a very necessary and useful reaction. Anger is appropriate as a communication of feeling in reaction to another person's behavior. Psalm 7:11, God
is a righteous judge, a God who expresses his wrath every day. Interesting little psalm, isn't it? He expresses his wrath. God is angry. And we'll talk about that a little later on. Mark chapter 3, Jesus was angry with the money changers because they were making his father's house a house of thieves. And so he overturned the tables. He showed his anger. So there is an anger that is justified. I say this again, anger is a gift from God, and it is totally appropriate to feel anger and to be angry. All emotions are constructive when used properly. Certainly the anger that Jesus Christ exhibited didn't damage his body, as anger will if you don't deal with it. Any questions on that? Feel free. You got a question? Bonnie, you got a question?
Well, when I read that meaning up there, it seems to be about self. But sometimes anger is what you see someone doing to someone else or an animal, for example.
Right, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's incorporated as well.
Sure.
For what you
would,
see.
Would you like to expand that, or do you think that... For example, let's go back to the, since Bonnie's holding us up here. It is a feeling of tension and aggressiveness, right? And it does arise in a person when you face an obstacle. So there you have it.
Okay.
That answers your question. So why did you raise that when it was already so obvious?
Because my mind was traveling a path of something I saw one time that really made
you angry. Yes.
Very angry.
And that's fine. That's okay. It is a feeling. There's an obstacle, and it could be an unfairness. I think all of us sense the anger we have toward some of the things that are going on in the world, some of the children who are suffering.
Yeah.
Not because of anything they've done, but just where they were born. That hit me this week. Like it hasn't for a long time when I realized the fortune that we have having been born in this country. I mean, it is unbelievable when you think of what's going on in our world today. All right. No other questions besides Bonnie's interruption? Okay, number two. Number three. When is anger not justified? Ephesians chapter 4. Let's look at that. Let's begin by looking in our scriptures at Ephesians chapter 4. And we'll pick it up at verse 26, the first part of 26. This is well known, we referred to this already. In your anger, do not sin. So that statement, which is more directly translated than even in the King James, but that statement would indicate that the sin should not occur when we are angry. So it doesn't say don't be angry. It says that when you are angry. So how do you bring those two together? How do you reconcile those two statements? How do you get angry without sinning?
Pray right on the spot.
Pray on the spot. And what do you pray on the spot?
God will help you.
Do what?
Keep it cool.
Keep it cool. You ever prayed that?
No, but I thought that'd be a good idea.
Liar. By the way, Gloria passed the 80th birthday this past, was it this week?
What? That's Pauline. Oh, my sister Pauline.
Oh, Paul.
I haven't hit 75 yet.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's my mind. I haven't had a lot of sleep, so. But you are sisters, and you're the elder sister, the elder of five girls. She got a birthday cake, and she had a party, the first party she's had in 80 years. Right? That's what you told me. Yeah. So, sorry. Yeah, you don't look the...
You don't look 80 at all. There are two ways that righteous anger is justified, and it can become unrighteous or unjustified. And these are the two ways it can be unjustified. Number one, by the ventilation of anger. The ventilation. That produces, that's blowing up. When you blow up and you hurt others. And what Gloria, Pauline's sister, has said, younger sister, has said, it's a matter of prayer, praying. And sometimes that's basically what it is. There's a split second that we have to say, Lord, help me, help me. I'm feeling like I'm going to blow up. Well, that's a wrong kind of anger. You can lose friendship. You can destroy significant relationships. You can divide a marriage. You can lose your testimony. It can actually injure your body if it's not dealt with. And so ventilation. Somebody said temper is such a wonderful thing, it's a shame to lose it. We want to keep our temper, but by the same token, as we've already seen, there are times where anger is justified. There's another thing that is the wrong, unjustified expression of anger, and that is by internalization of anger. When I internalize, I clam up, and that can hurt us, where we suppress it. We don't deal with it. We don't say anything about it. We just keep it to ourselves, and it percolates in us. It injures our body. It produces irritability, tenseness, and we become miserable as a result of that. A person who clams up is not good company to be in. It hurts relationships. Now let's go over to the book of wisdom, which is the book of Proverbs, and let's look at chapter 19 and verse 11. There are several proverbs, and I know this is wisdom literature, but it has some great statements that can be of value to us in our study of anger. Verse 11 of Proverbs 19. It says this: a man's wisdom gives him patience. It is to his glory to overlook an offense. A man's wisdom gives him patience. It is to his glory to overlook an offense. Now, we'll talk a bit about this in a few minutes. Chapter 12. Let's go back to chapter 12. Verse 17, the first part of verse 17 of chapter 12 of Proverbs. Did I say 12? I mean 14. Verse 17. A quick-tempered man does foolish things, and a crafty man is hated. A quick-tempered man does foolish things, and a crafty man is hated. Verse 29, same chapter. Verse 29. A patient man has great understanding, but a quick-tempered man displays folly. Chapter 15, the very next chapter, verse 18, says this: a hot-tempered man stirs up dissension, but a patient man calms a quarrel. Chapter 22, verses 24 and 25, over a few pages. 22, 24, and 25. Do not make friends with a hot-tempered man. Do not associate with one easily angered, or you may learn his ways and get yourself ensnared. I think that's a fascinating statement. Let me read that again. Do not make friends with a hot-tempered man. Do not associate with the one easily angered, or you may learn his ways and get yourself ensnared. Clamming up is like Mount St. Helens.
holding it in for others leads to bitterness and resentment and is extremely, extremely destructive. Now, number four, how do we handle anger? Gloria has suggested we pray. What ways do you feel we can, what can we do to not slip from righteous anger or righteous indignation and destructive anger? Any thoughts?
Go for a walk.
Go for a walk? Mm-hmm. Any particular spot? Okay. Forgive the other person, right? We'll talk about how to do that at about 11:45 or so. Any thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Maybe talk.
Talk with the person?
Mm-hmm.
How would you talk to the person?
Before you're ready to blow, instead of internalizing it, to say something before it gets that far.
Right. There's another proverb that says a soft answer, what?
Turns away
wrath. What happens when you try to engage in some kind of confrontation with someone else is it heats up. This can happen in families a lot. In some of the family counseling I've done, that's the way it is. I've seen people in a counseling environment where the wife makes a statement and the husband raises his voice and he shouts back at somebody, and then she raises her voice and he raises his voice, and it's sort of like this porcupine's trying to embrace. Hurts. Okay, anything else? What's that? What'd you say? It sounded, you're laughing about it. You didn't. Liar. We have a number of them here today. All right. Number one, A, how do we handle anger? Admit that ventilation is a sin. Ventilation is a sin. Anger is not sinful, but when it is directed toward another human being, it is. It becomes a sin when the anger is directed at another person. I have no right to ventilate toward another or to undermine a relationship. I must admit this is sin, missing God's mark, and we need to seek forgiveness. It's okay to say that you're angry. It's okay to say to your wife, honey, I am very angry at what happened or what you said or what happened yesterday with the kid. I am very angry about that. It is okay. That is a great way to begin to ventilate in the proper way. I want to talk about this. Somebody mentioned that already. So number one, we admit ventilation is a sin. It is a sin. And sin needs to be confessed as a sin. And again, as we saw a couple of weeks ago with guilt, we need to acknowledge what sin is. That sin is that which separates us from a relationship with God. If I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord will not hear me. So I need to make sure I keep short accounts with God. B, develop a desire to control it before it can't be controlled. Desire, and that comes from within us. God's power is available to those who desire it. What Gloria has said, does it may sound trite. Well, just pray. We shouldn't use the word just in there, but we need to pray. Lord, help me. There was a very brief second of time that Peter had when he stepped out on the water and took his eyes off Jesus and started to sink. He said, Lord, save me. And he was saved. He didn't drown. He didn't fall underwater. And there's a very slim, there is no temptation taken you, but such as is common to men, but God will with the temptation, what? Make a way of escape that you may be able to bear it. It's a very interesting way he put it. We bear
the pain of the disagreement, but we don't have an excuse to say, I have every right to be sinful or to be angry. So I need to avoid or admit ventilation in the wrong sense is a sin and develop a desire to control it before it can be controlled. And again, the soft answer turns away wrath. If we can take the initiative to make sure that we don't raise our voice when there's discussion in the home or with our children, this can happen many times with our kids, right? Oh, goodness. For those of you who have been blessed with children, my father used to say when he looked after our three kids, they bring the angels over at 1 and pick the devils up at 4:30. They're typical kids. They're typical kids. And all of us deal with that. How do you deal with a teenager who is mouthing back to you? And the natural tendency is to ventilate on them. And you know it's wrong, but you have no idea what to do with them. We'll talk about that in a minute or two as well. Because we've got so much time. We've got to learn restraint control. And that's a learned behavior. A learned behavior. Proverbs 15:1, we've referred to this already. A soft answer turns away wrath. Someone has said that counting to 10 or 50 or 100 would be compatible to what Solomon is saying in this particular proverb. It doesn't say no answer. It says a soft answer. Now, let me digress here for a moment without digressing and point out that there are a number of different forms of anger, right? One that is extremely prevalent today, from my perspective, is what we would call passive-aggressive behavior. We are having an epidemic of passive-aggressive behavior. I want to give you some examples. There are 8 examples of passive-aggressive behavior that may help you identify something that, with which you're dealing or help you understand the irresponsible person you're having struggles with. Number one, resenting the demands of others. When others make requests or demands of them, passive-aggressive people will often view them as unfair or unjust. They will bottle them up and resent the other person for making the demands. They quickly forget that they did not have to agree to the demand or that they could have voiced their feelings at that time that the request was made. So resenting the demands, a boss who demands of you that you do certain things. The way out of that, a non-volatile way, is to say, you know what, I appreciate, I respect the fact that you trust this with me, but I've got to be honest with you. My feeling is one of being overwhelmed. And I just cannot. I'd love to do it, but I just cannot do that. That's a way to approach that rather than resenting that. Because resentment, you have no idea how many people I bump into who struggle with their boss who they feel is unfair. And yet I say, have you talked to your boss? No, I haven't talked to my boss. I can't talk to my boss or whatever the case may be. Number two, deliberate procrastination. Procrastination is... I'll do it later. Putting things off. It's a subconscious decision. All right? Procrastination is a subconscious. You usually don't even think of it. You just, never do today what you can put off and do tomorrow. But a passive-aggressive person is often, it's a conscious decision. That's the difference. It's a conscious decision. I'm not going to do that. Now, you find this a lot with children. Clean up your room, especially when the mother of the child sees cockroaches going to it to commit suicide. I mean, that room is so filthy.
You need to clean it up. And passive-aggressive behavior can be seen in a child who will not do that because it's a defiance. Number three, intentional mistakes. And again, jump in at any time if you have any questions, and Jason will answer them for you. Intentional mistakes. Again, rather than say no, passive-aggressive people sometimes find it easier to deliberately perform poorly at the task. I'll do it, but I'm not going to do a good job of it, because the next time you want it done, you're not going to ask me. That's passive-aggressive behavior. Number four, hostile attitude. As they often assume that others know how they feel, passive-aggressive people tend to immediately assume that anything they do not approve of was intended to be a jibe at them. This is an interesting thing about the human psyche, and that is that we will tend to look at other people and assume that they would respond to situations the way we would. And so we jump to the conclusion that they're thinking the same thing we're thinking, and that can cause a passive-aggressive behavior. Remember I referred a few weeks ago to that book by Pennell, and it, to a husband and wife. Men are like waffles, women like spaghetti. Because women, the way they process things, women do not have the capacity to isolate anything from their mind. Everything is going through their mind all at once. And something that happened to a woman 3 months ago can still be right there in their face. Not so with men. We compartmentalize. 3 minutes ago, yes. It's like a waffle. You pour syrup on a waffle and it goes in those little squares, and nothing in that square touches that one or that one or that one. Very isolated. Women do not have that capacity. Well, you can see that if a husband thinks that his wife should just step over it, get with it, lady. Come on, what's the matter with you? Why are you letting that bother you? That happened 17 years ago. The spaghetti noodles are all connected. So what's the matter? When Peter says in 1 Peter, 1:3, live with your wife according to knowledge. That's a very interesting statement. We have to learn how to communicate and how to read responses and reactions. So a hostile attitude. Number five, the complaints of injustice and lack of appreciation. Everything is viewed as an attack on them. It's all about me. When something doesn't go their way, it is seen as unfair or an injustice. It's all about how the world impacts them. That's a passive-aggressive behavior. That's an evidence of it. Okay, number six. Disguising criticism with compliments. It's another way. At first, passive-aggressive people may seem pleasant and warm. They often appear to be complimentary. It's only after they've left that you realize that the compliment was actually disguising as a cheap jibe. Have you ever had that happen? We won't ask for testimonies this morning, but... Number seven, the last punch. Passive-aggressive people want to get the last word in. You know, the discussion is over. You've sort of settled things, and then there's one last barb. That's a passive-aggressive behavior. Or number eight, the silent treatment. You just don't say anything. As stated at the start, passive-aggressive behavior is recognizable by the disconnect between what is being said and what is being done. Nothing highlights this more than the famous silent treatment. Silence generally signifies agreement, but not in this case. When you are on the receiving end of the silent treatment, you realize that the other person is far from agreeable. They have a big problem with you, and just to allow themselves the victory, they have no intention of telling you what that is. I spent some time with a woman this week who was struggling with a sister-in-law. Wasn't in our family, by the way, so don't try to think it was at the wedding or something like that.
And I said, what do you think the problem is? Well, they don't like me. Well, why? How do you know they don't? I just know they don't like me. I just know it. Have you ever spoken to them about it? Well, no, I don't need to because I know she does not like me. Well, what signs have you seen? Well, there haven't been any signs, but I just know she doesn't like me. Now, what would you say if you were in that kind of a situation? What would you tell this dear lady? And don't say, tell her to snap out of it. Talk to the person. Well, what do you say to the person? You don't like me. What would you say?
How have I ruffled your feathers?
How have I ruffled your feathers? But she haven't set me off. I just know. You haven't said anything to me. I just know that you don't like me.
Sounds to me like the shoe's on the other foot. She's the problem, not the people. She's imagining things that aren't so.
But how will she deal with it? She's becoming angry. Because this person doesn't like to be with that person, doesn't like to talk to them, doesn't like to go over to their place, doesn't like to see them in church.
Well, then she should come and see you.
Well, she did. I'm asking you what I should have told her.
So what'd you tell her?
What did I tell her? You always like to get to the bottom line, don't you? Yes. Right. So it's a matter of examining herself and examining her motives. Now, how do you approach that person? Well, I think we can approach people based on feelings, okay? I don't think we have to have any concrete evidence that there's definitely a way that this person has demonstrated their inability to deal with you. But to sit down with a person, you're right, and say, you know what? Could you help me? I'm having a feeling here that maybe I have offended you. You ruffle your feathers, I suppose you could say that. But that I have, this is the feeling I have. So it's all about me asking. It's not about you. You're causing me pain. No, it's a matter of, listen, can you help me understand? Am I picking something up wrong? Am I sending out improper vibes? Have I ever done anything to you to cause you to be tense with me? Or I just am getting this feeling. I mean, we're all able to accept the fact that we have feelings. That's all right to have feelings. And it's all right to express those feelings. And that's really the beginning of dealing with anger, expressing the feelings. You know what? I'm struggling with anger because of something that has happened between us, and I need to make it right. So it's a matter of being willing to sit down with the person in a very loving environment, praying for wisdom. Before you confront anybody, we should pray for wisdom. And then maybe the person will say, no, absolutely not. And maybe the person will say, yeah, I've had some things. Well, can we deal with it? What can I do to help it? I think that's a great way to approach. When somebody admits that you've offended them, okay, what can I do to make it right? And if you're owning it, yes. What can I do to make it right? And if they say, well, you can hang it on your beak. Okay, I will. Thank you. You've done your part. You've done your part. Like, I love your shirt. If I were you, I'd buy two and throw them both away. You know, I mean... You do have to watch how you process. And I think the method of dealing with it is just as important as the fact of dealing with it. The thing is, you know within your heart if you have the feelings that are building up, whether it be passive-aggressive behavior or just anger toward another person, or you see another person and you have those feelings. We need to deal with those. It's a sin not to deal with them. But the way we deal with them is just as important. Okay? Do I have any other points? Let me just check. Did they deal with, here's a good one. Proverbs 15, I've done that one already. Okay, here's number D. Redirect anger to the problem, not the person. We've touched on this, but you got to deal with the problem. When you put the direction toward the problem, what is causing the problem or the challenge? I don't like that word problem. What is causing the challenge? Then you can deal with it, and you need to deal with it openly and honestly and spend your energy building up rather than pulling down. And when we talked about the tongue a few weeks ago, one of the biggest challenges is when we talk behind the back of somebody who's hurt us. That is a very natural tendency to do that. When we go to someone else and we badmouth the person that has offended us because we feel justified in doing that. They hurt me, so I'm going to hurt them. I can't do it directly, but I will tell other people. And I'm going to tell you this so that you can pray more intelligently. That's a great line, isn't it? You ever have anybody come to you and say? Anyway, any thoughts or questions on that one? An excellent solution to resentment. Tim, could you do me a favor and take these two chairs up to the platform and have them face each other?
Not really?
No, your back's not good. Okay, no problem. Who has a good back? You got a good back, brother?
You can just sit on the steps.
But you don't know what I'm doing. Why do you think I need two chairs? No comment. How's it? Do you know how to disconnect them? Oh. Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. All right. Here's a practical way that you can use in dealing with any of the topics we've talked about so far. Forgiveness, guilt, or anger. Because sometimes the person who needs to be approached cannot be approached for whatever reason. Maybe they're dead. Maybe the situation is so volatile that you know that you can't confront them. Here is a way that you can use that is somewhat helpful in you dealing with it. There's something about transferring the reality and the pain and the hurt. For example, 1 in 4, I've shared this before, but 1 in 4 women in our society have been sexually abused. 1 in 6 men have been sexually abused. So 25% of the women in our society, in Canada, in our society, have been violated. Now, what do those women do with this? Maybe it's a father, maybe it's an uncle, maybe it's a brother. How do you confront a person? Well, often you can't because maybe they're dead. Your uncle has died and you've never resolved that. Now, the irony is this. That person who violated you continues to control you. And you ask yourself the question, why do we let them control us? They've controlled us enough when we were vulnerable. Now, maybe it's not abuse. Maybe it's emotional abuse. You were raised in an environment where you can't remember your parents telling you they love you. They've always put you down. You get an 80% and they say, why didn't you get a 90%? Sally up the street got a 90%. I mean, there's all kinds of abuse that goes on. Verbal abuse, emotional abuse. Sometimes there's spiritual abuse. If you're involved in a legalistic kind of church where jumping through hoops and keeping lists of what you do and don't do, that can cause some emotional pain as you develop and try to find the freedom in grace. So here's something you can do. You take two chairs and try not to trip over them. You take two chairs and you sit in one. And you, in your mind, put the other person right here. Maybe it's a father, maybe it's an uncle, maybe it's a brother.
Maybe it's a mother who's never affirmed you, and she's caused you no end of pain. Maybe it's a neighbor. Maybe it's just a friend from high school. I remember counseling a young girl who, while she was going to Bible college, was very sexually intimate with a fellow who became the president of the student council in the seminary. And he went on to be a pastor of a church, and he's currently a pastor. And she came to see me and said, I am struggling so much with the fact that he violated me. Never once has he said he's sorry. Never once. He's just moved on. He has kids. I've gotten married and gotten kids. But I cannot get deliverance from this pain that continues to be there. Every time I see him, it comes back to me again as to what he did to me. So, I mean, there are all kinds of things. And, you know, if we took the time today and swept through this group, I guarantee some of the stories that you have hidden in your heart, are real and painful. And maybe you don't know how to deal with it. It's not an easy process, but here's something you can do that can be of help. So here is the person. Uncle Bill, I realize that I've had great respect for you as I was growing up, and yet you remember the time that you violated me. I still remember the nights you would come into my room when you stayed over at my parents' place, and you touched me inappropriately. I remember the feeling I had. I didn't know what to do about it. I remember you leaving my room, and I cried and cried. And from that time, as I grew into a young woman, an adult, you have no idea the pain you've caused me. When I got married, I struggled in my marriage because of that, and I've never been able to resolve it. And I want you to know that you caused me an incredible amount of pain. But I sit in front of you today, and I tell you that no more are you going to control me. By God's grace, I forgive you. I can't do it in my strength, but I am asking God to forgive me so I can have freedom. I know you've been dead for 3 years, but you continue to control me, and I'm not going to allow you to control me anymore. From now on, I'm going to be delivered from the control that you have had on my life, and I am going to live a free life in Jesus Christ, and I'm going to believe that God is going to give me the rest of my days living in peace. You see that? You know, there's emotion in something like that. And you maybe you'll go this. I've done this myself with some people in my life. One time it was a deacon at a church I was pastoring, and I told him what for, because I really couldn't approach him in person, and God really helped me to move over that. I grew to love that man, cherished him, and when I buried him, I didn't say hee-haw. You finally got your just reward? No, I didn't. So another thing you can do is you can write a letter. A lot of people will do this. They'll write a letter to the person and do basically the same thing. So there's something about writing something down or communicating it verbally that will help you to be delivered from that. Now, sometimes you go back to the chairs again and again, and maybe it's 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, 15 times or whatever. But in doing so, you somehow seek to have deliverance, saying those words, but by God's grace, I am not going to allow you to control me anymore. I am not going to be angry towards you. I am going to forgive you, because you will one day stand before Jesus Christ, and you will give an account of what you did to me. But I will also stand before him, and I will give account as to what I've done as a result of those circumstances. Did I allow that to control me, or did I come to a place of realizing that by the grace of God, there could be deliverance? All right? Questions, comments, thoughts? Anybody read any books that are good in this topic you'd like to share with us?
section was on forgiveness. This is a long time ago I read it.
Was it Peace with God? Is that the name of the book?
Peace with God through how you behave, because God forgave you.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't deserve to be forgiven.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And he expects that we forgive others kindly.
Right, right. The verses that were read this morning. What verses did you read? Did you read something from Corinthians? Or did I doze off at that particular time? Was that the one about God comforting us so that we in turn can comfort others? Yeah. Yep. 3 and 4 of 2 Corinthians 1. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies, the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction so we will be able to comfort others. And some of the greatest counselors have been people who've gone through deep pain and sorrow. I can think of a lady in London who deals only with abuse cases, and she was desperately abused as a child. But she came to a point of doing exactly what we did here this morning and said, no longer is that person going to control me. I'm going to use that pain in my life to minister to other people. I'm not going to grovel in my challenge. I'm not going to ask, where was God? Why didn't he protect me when I was growing up? I'm going to say, okay, God has a purpose, and one day he's going to explain the purpose. I won't care at that time about that purpose, but I'm going to use it. And when she can sit with young girls and say, you know what? I was abused, and I know the pain you're going through. That has opened up to her this massive amount. I mean, she's an incredible counselor right now. Yes?
There's this little program that we go to called Celebrate Recovery.
Yes, Celebrate Recovery.
For those of us who grew up in families where we were abused and have worked through the anger, and part of my testimony when I give it at Celebrate Recovery is that it took me a while. I said I forgave. Now I'm at the point where I not only don't wish him dead, but I would give CPR should it be required.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Celebrate Recovery.
Yeah,
so
that's right. Because it is a recovery process, isn't it?
It is.
And you do celebrate that.
You do.
Exactly. Does, it takes time.
Yeah.
And it's not just a quick.
No.
You can't hang on to that for years and years and expect that one little prayer is going to take it away. And there will always be a scar. I don't think anybody who's been abused in that way can ever really fully recover from that. They certainly can't recover without help. Okay, yes, yes.
I just have a whole problem, maybe you can explain that. I would believe Jesus meant it when he cleared the temple, and he used some strong words, right? So it says ventilation is a sin. I'm not so sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me clarify that and say the ventilation that tries to get even with the other person is a sin.
Okay.
But ventilation that deals with the problem or the challenge is not a sin. And that's really what Jesus did in the temple. He was angry, but he was angry for the purpose of, I mean, he dealt with the problem. He didn't just deal with the people, say. The people were part of the problem. Okay. Does that help?
Yeah, I think so.
So you agree with me now? Yes. Oh, I agree. Because we are told to vent in the sense that we're to be angry. And part of anger is venting, even if it's to vent with the person that say, you have offended me, or I have offended you, or there's something between us. That's
not a sin.
It's not in that context. If it's something that wells up within you and you want to have a determination to get even with that person, or it becomes passive-aggressive behavior, that's wrong. And that's why we have to evaluate. And sometimes you have to find professional counselors that would help you. There's a lot of good Christian counselors. If you'd like the names, I have some cards in my desk that will help if you ever feel the need to step further. You're tired of this ongoing guilt. Yes.
Another good book around that is Released from Shame, and we have it in the library.
Released from Shame by... Okay, but it's in our library, Released from Shame. Any other books? T.J. Jakes, yeah? Thou art loose, woman. Great title. Great title. Okay. Anything else? Well, we've still got about 45 minutes. But I should close.
You know what you did up there?
Yes?
It's never too late. Some people don't realize that.
That's right.
Too late to tend to that problem.
Mm-hmm.
And because it does gnaw at you.
Mm-hmm.
And it can shape unworthiness
mm-hmm.
that you feel within yourself.
Exactly.
That you're not worthy.
Yep. William Backus wrote a book entitled Telling Yourself the Truth. Mm-hmm. And in it he says, as Christians, we tell ourselves about 200 lies on average every day. Mm-hmm. And that's just self-talk. You can't do that. How can you claim to be a Christian and have that attitude? And on and on and on. And he says there needs to come a time where we're able to do what Philippians 4:8 says, the things that are true and honest, a good report, if there's any virtue, any praise, think on those things. And that's really what you're doing in an event like that. You're thinking on the fact that you have hurt me and I vent that to you, but I'm not going to allow that to continue to control you. All right? Well, thank you for your patience. I was only going to take about 10 minutes this morning, but with your interruptions. Let's pray. Father, we are grateful to you for your patience with us as we seek to work through some of the challenges. Thank you for the gift of pain. Thank you for the gift of guilt. Thank you for the gift of anger, because we know that anger reveals to us a need to address issues that could be detrimental to the ongoing ministry that we could have in our lives and through our lives to touch others. You know each heart in this place, and pray that you would give hope to those who are struggling with whatever it is they're struggling. And we would ask this in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen. If we can be of any help to encourage you in any way, by all means, don't hesitate to give a call to the office. Pat will set something up where you could speak to Pastor Jason or myself. This past week, because Tuesday was inclement, I wasn't able to make it over here. So I'll be in the office this week from on Tuesday and on Thursday. So if either of those two dates would help to have a coffee together or share together, we'd be more than happy to help you. Father, again, we thank you for your word, which is of such encouragement to us. Thank you for the hope that we have in Jesus Christ. Thank you for the power of the resurrected Christ that we have celebrated in communion today. And as we go our separate ways, we'd ask that you would go before us and help us to deal with some of these very painful issues in each of our lives. We take them not lightly, but we know that you are able to use them to bring glory to your name and peace to our hearts. For Jesus' sake, amen. Sorry, I didn't know you had a bad time.
Oh, yeah. These chairs are heavy. I'm going to carry them up the stairs.
I don't understand that. Thank you, sir, very much.
Oh, no.